Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the September 12, 2021 session, focusing on Mark chapter 8, verses 27 through 38. What do you say? I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Crystal Shepherd.
And I'm Daniel Glaze.
So sometimes the group here helps me come up with these little lead-in questions, and today that was the case. And I have to say that I'm a bit uncomfortable about it because
see,
I was like, well, I don't know if I have a good sense of this or not. So anyway, here's the question. How might other people describe you? Yeah. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, other than like incredibly good looking.
Clearly.
No, of course. The hesitancy was I just didn't want to say it first. That's really hard to say. It's either hard to say or you don't really want to travel too far down that road because, you know, who knows? if they say that I'm a kind person, that's about the best I think you could want.
Mm-hmm. I think it depends on who you talk to. For me.
Ask my kids.
Yeah, like I know how I think I might come across to other people, but I don't know, you know. Mm-hmm. I would hope, like Daniel said, that people would say I was kind and that I listened and that I cared. But I also know I can be loud. And I can be distracted and I can get really opinionated. And so, like, you know, I think it would depend on who you asked, like, what they thought.
I think that's true for me, too. Though I think most everybody would tell you that I was loud, just in general, not on occasion. And I hope people would call me kind and faithful. I imagine they might call me enthusiastic. Yeah, it is an uncomfortable. Who came up with this question?
It's Daniel.
Daniel! This is a hard question.
This was so hard. And I think we should probably ask why it's so hard, right? I mean, that's real. And I was sitting here going, dadgummit, as old as I am, and I still have trouble answering this. I mean, I think for me, probably I have the reputation for being innovative, for being controlling, for being sometimes really serious, and also I can be really silly. I don't have a whole lot of trouble with those things. I think that people would say I was genuine. Wow, that's hard to think about. And, you know, there's also the element of think, what would people say about you? To your face or behind your back.
Right? Yeah.
Oh.
Maybe we should tell each other what we think about each. No, don't do that. Yes. It's a bad idea.
Well, it's a question that comes up in a form in this passage. So I suppose that's why Daniel encouraged us to go there. And since Daniel has the intro, I'm going to let you dig yourself out of this hole.
Well, I really appreciate that.
Okay.
So years ago on this podcast, and it was probably when David was asking the opening questions, we shared together some of our fears. I don't even recall what the focal passage of scripture for that episode was or even how we got on the subject, but it was several years ago, and I distinctly remember that introductory question. I remember it vividly because ever since then, I have been ridiculed, berated, unjustly by David, Crystal, Nikki, and Bert about my deep-seated yet perfectly rational fear of clowns. I mean, I'm a martyr. I'm a saint, really, because of this treatment. But anyway, speaking of fears, can y'all guess the top fear, the most popular phobia. For the past 25 years, the top phobia is, any guesses?
Spiders.
Yeah.
Speaking in public.
Nikki got it. Speaking in public. Spiders is up there.
Okay.
So is claustrophobia, fear of heights. But for the past 25 years or so, that top spot has been held by public speaking. And I'm not entirely sure why that is, because I've never had that fear. Now, to be sure, I can't climb a ladder taller than my head, but I've never had that fear of public speaking. In fact, I put food on the table by opening my mouth in front of a crowd on a very regular basis. So it always surprises me when I hear folks say they'd rather be kicked out of an airplane with a used parachute than stand in front of others and have to speak. So imagine this. I get in the pulpit and say, okay, folks, next Sunday, I want two or three of you to come up here and give a 10-minute testimony on who Jesus is for you. How many people do you think would raise their hands and say, sure, Pastor, I'll be glad to? If there were one person, I'd be surprised. Regardless, I suspect not many would do that. Maybe it's because of the fear of public speaking. Maybe it's because of that question. But that question is precisely what Jesus asks of his disciples one day. He turns to them and he says, what's the word on the street? What are folks saying about me? Who do they say that I am? Of course, there were the answers that Jesus probably expected. Some say you're John the Baptist or Elijah or one of the other prophets. But then Jesus asks another question. It's both very similar to the first and altogether different. Who do you say that I am? It's a good question. And I've spent the better part of 30 years since I first professed faith in Christ trying to answer that question. Not what does everyone else say? Who do you say that Jesus is? I'm not blaming anyone, and truth be told, as a pastoral leader, I probably shoulder as much blame as anyone. But why is it that we can talk on and on and on about anything and everything except matters of faith? It's almost as if we are a sort of religious tourist just passing through, without ever taking a stand and saying, okay, this is what I believe. With all my heart, this is what I believe about God. And to be honest, just asking that question seems to indicate that the expected answer is some sort of doctoral dissertation loaded with big theological words or grand philosophical concepts. And I could be wrong on this, but I don't think it's that complicated. Because since David assigned me this passage to talk about, I've been thinking about this question all week. Who do I say that Jesus is? And while there are as many answers as there are people, this is what I think I believe. When we look at Jesus, we see the heart of God in human form. That is, Jesus shows us who God is, what God is like. Here's what I mean. Do you remember that time a crowd gathered to hear Jesus preach and they were far from home and they were so hungry and Jesus fed every last one of them? That's what God is like. Do you remember when he took those little children on his lap and blessed them and talked to them? God's like that too. Do you remember when those religious fellows with stones in their hands dragged before Jesus a woman caught in the act of adultery? By the way, they didn't drag the man with whom she was adulterous, but that's another story. Jesus refused to join in their condemnation. That's what God is like. Do you remember when that bleeding and outcast woman, or that desperate father, or the Syrophoenician woman, or that leper came up to Jesus and cried, "Help me!" And Jesus helped them. That's what God is like. Do you remember that time Jesus was with his disciples and they were going on and on about who was loved most and who was the greatest? And Jesus answered them by taking a towel and a bowl of water and he washed their feet. That's what God is like. Do you remember when he was beaten and bruised and tired and broken and he took the cross on his shoulders and walked up the hill to Golgotha? That's what God is like. But that's me. What do you think? Who do you say that Jesus is?
Well, I don't even know where we go after that. You preached the whole sermon. Mm-hmm. And I love how you made the connection to how Jesus lives his entire life shows us who God is. It puts it in a different perspective. I guess that if I were going to add anything to that, I think also, just like Jesus, I agree completely. Jesus shows us the human heart of God, the heart of God in human form, 100%. I don't know that I could have said it any better or more succinctly myself. I think also Jesus shows me who I can aspire to be. Right?
Yeah.
Like, how do I live that way? How, you know, like, not to be glib, but that old, what would Jesus do? Well, usually what Jesus would do is really kind of hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that was beautiful. And I'm going to think on that probably this entire weekend. So thank you for that, Daniel.
Yeah, I was going to say we could just end the podcast, like, right as soon as you finish, Daniel. I
mean, there's
like,
nothing else to say.
Yeah, I'm like, I love the picture that you painted for, you know, like as you're going through each of these, you know, Bible stories that I've heard over and over and over again throughout my years in this journey. There was like this fresh perspective for me of like, I've heard over and over again, I've told my children, you know, Jesus shows us who God is. But like, you just like put this like real, for lack of a better word, flesh on that of like, and what about this? And look at this and see this. And it, the one thing that I thought about, the one story that I thought about was when Lazarus is dead and Jesus grieves. I mean, Jesus knows, but Jesus grieves. You know, he knows Lazarus is dead, but he grieves. He wept. And then, like, he takes the frustration, you know, of Lazarus's family. Where were you? Why weren't you here? So I think Jesus is comforting. So if I think, who do I say Jesus is? Jesus is my companion. I think about Jesus as the good shepherd, and that shows us who God is. Like, God knows me by name. God is that intimate with me, and God does not leave me. Those things, I think, Jesus is that constant presence with me that assures me that no matter what, I am not alone. Can you tell I have a fear of being alone? Please don't start, don't start picking on me about that. But, you know, I just, that to me, because there are times in our lives where we feel alone and we feel sadness and at our rock bottom. And I think for me, that is what Jesus has been. In, you know, in those times of like mountaintop experiences, yes, Jesus is there, but Jesus to me is that presence that is like closer than my breath. I'm glad you asked the question. Like, I don't know that I really have opportunity just to like sit and think about that. So like Nikki, I think I'll be thinking about this for a while. Like,
I thought about that for several days before I even started writing. I don't mean to say that I'm ahead of anybody else, but I've had the benefit, as we all have on this podcast, of a rich theological education.
Sure.
And yet we still struggle to express questions such as, and it's not because it's an unanswerable question.
Right.
But I, speaking of unanswerable, I don't know that I have a good answer to the question of why it's so hard for us. Part of that, I wonder if it has anything to do with the way we have privatized our own faith. You know, it's sort of a, hey, listen, it's a God and me thing. Don't ask any questions. You know, where where we're not challenged within an environment and where we, among others, talk about matters of faith. Because I've often said, you know, faith is personal, no doubt about it, but it's not private. In that, if anything, it is, yes, it is deeply personal, but it is lived out among others. I don't think I'm wrong in that.
No, I don't think you are either. I think close to the, but close to what you were getting at, there is a personal aspect. I think I'd be curious to know if, like you said, the privatization of our faith has grown over the years, but I imagine that the polarization that we are all experiencing now and in the last couple decades in our own country and existence here causes us to feel too vulnerable about something that's so personal. To put it out there is means somebody might say, no, that's wrong.
I think there's a lot of disagreement about who Jesus is. I think that's what it feels like. That's what you're getting at. And I think when you tie the person of Jesus to patriotism and nationalism, I think that is part of what where the waters get muddied. When you do make, you know, that's kind of like a bigger, broader thing, but also like when you make Jesus so personal that Jesus is not for everyone, he's only for my particular group, my particular brand of Christianity. I think that plays into it a little bit. At least in my mind, it does. I've seen that kind of happen.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. And I, one of the most interesting, I do have a point here. One of the most interesting worship spaces I've ever been in is the chapel at Campbell University in North Carolina. The chapel has floor-to-ceiling windows all around. I mean, it light floods in. It's distracting sometimes, you know, because of all the activity going on. I mean, the chapel's in the center of the campus, or certainly in the heart of the campus. Yet there are these huge windows all up and down the sides, floor to ceiling. And I remember asking someone about it. I don't know if it was their campus minister or chaplain there. I don't recall now. It's been several years. But they said, we never want to forget that we worship in here so that we can serve out there. We see the people that God is calling us to love and serve. And I was so struck by that, the theology of the place. And contrast that with a lot of churches you may see on TV where the, and this is showing my own bias, lots of contemporary manifestations of, you know, the cool hip church. It's in a very darkened theater with the only lights are up front. And that's making a theological statement as well, that the holy is up there where we can't even see our neighbors, let alone people outside of these walls. I wonder if that has contributed, I'll get around to my point here sometime. What if that's contributed to this privatization of our faith, that it's just a God and me thing that doesn't involve others, let alone get worked out in that crucible of Christian community that can form and inform one another and cause me to break down and rethink and reshape and reform what I think I believe.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if all of that has contributed to our lack of being able to give language to what is a very fundamental part of our faith. Who is Jesus, this one we claim to follow? And I don't say that condemning or condescendingly. I struggle with that too. Mm-hmm. Sorry, that was a little of a soapbox. I didn't realize I had that in me. Crystal, you're rubbing off.
I am.
I love it. I love it.
Can you imagine what it's going to be like by December with me doing a podcast with you?
Lord have mercy.
I'm just going to sit back and not say anything. I'll just let Daniel go.
Well, I may get on a soapbox for a few minutes. Because when we ask questions of, like we're having here around the identity, who is Jesus? Who is this person? It's a really important question, right? I mean, it's not just academically important. It's important because it affects the way we practice our faith. It affects the way we try to live ourselves. It's a really important question. Who do you say that Jesus is? And I'm reminded, okay, so my background, even in theological education, is an educator. And if you think about a lot of the ways we approach knowing and learning, even teaching, it's often a process of separation. We separate ourselves from something so we can walk around it and study it and research it and gather information on it. And by doing so, we can then know a thing. And certainly in the sciences, that's quite legit, right? If you want to know something about a kind of rock or a plant or an animal or a dynamic in the weather. I mean, we study it as a thing, its properties and its characteristics and what it's made up of. There's a lot of that, I think, even in Western thought, where we separate ourselves from something in order to learn it and know it. The Christian tradition, and certainly the Hebrew way of learning, is to connect yourself with the thing you want to learn. I would even argue that it's a more feminine way of knowing, to be connected with. And why do I say that? I probably said this on the podcast before. Go ask a guy, you know, tell me about yourself, and you're going to get the things they do, you know, their career, their hobbies, their ask a woman, who are you? And you get told about family and connection. And I don't think that's innate. I think probably there's a lot of social programming that we are given that leads us to talk and think that way. Where am I going with this? So if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are someone who leads a Bible study group or participates in one. And in our context, it is these groups that we gather with, whatever we call them, are one of the few places that we actually can do, I think, what we've been trying to talk about on this podcast, and that is to share what we know about Jesus. Who do you think Jesus is? Because we're probably not going to have a big theological conversation about that, right? Well, Jesus is the incarnation. Well, yes, Jesus is the incarnation. But probably more importantly is, when I was sick and in the hospital, I relied on my faith and on this Christ, this Jesus, in a way that I didn't understand until I had that experience. That when I lost a job and felt lost and terrified, I discovered Jesus in the people around me and in my church and the way they cared about me. The stories of our lives, these are the stories of how we understand and know Jesus. And it's in our small groups that I think we hopefully build the environment and the trust where we can actually share these stories. Because this is how we connect with and share about who we think Jesus is. And so I'm led when I think this way to someone who has shaped my thinking. In fact, he's written a book called To Know As We Are Known, and it's Parker Palmer who wrote this. If you haven't read this book, you need to read it, especially if you're in any way involved in leading a group in a faith context, because he quickly unpacks, much more eloquently than I have today, this notion of connection with. And we understand that, right? Because we understand how we get to know our friends and our loved ones. And if someone asked me, well, how do you know Regina, my wife? How do I know her so well? Well, number one, I don't know her completely. But I do feel like I know her pretty well. And it's not because I studied her and studied her family background and her history and the things she likes and doesn't like. All those things matter, sure. But I know her because we've journeyed together. We have stories and experiences together. And I think that's what we forget sometimes in the educational life of our congregations, is that the stories of our lives and of our faith, those are the meat of Christian education. That's the place where we learn from each other and with each other who this Jesus is. And we can play a corrective for one another, right? So if someone has a strange and bizarre idea about who Jesus is, you know, it might be true, but it might also be that the rest of us go, well, have you thought about that? I haven't experienced that. And what Parker Palmer says to us is that to teach is to create a space in which the community of truth is practiced. And I hope that maybe Faith Element is a place where that is given a chance. And that even this crazy podcast where we wander around things and talk about them and struggle with them, in many ways is our way of setting some kind of an example to say, you can do this too. You can share stories. You can struggle with. You can come to the room and not have the answers. And Lord knows we don't.
True.
And that's okay. And that the most important thing that happens when your group gets together is that it's a safe space where we can share our stories of faith, not where we can take the test at the end and get the answers right. And that really is a different way of learning together. Who is this Jesus? Who do you say that I am? It's a really important question, and one I hope that we can struggle with together in our groups by telling our stories. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about our Faith Element Bible study curriculum at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.